Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Thursday, February 9th, 2023. We are in the Barnes Committee Room, 124 of the Alaska State Capitol Building. Let the record reflect the time is 13:02. Today we have present Representative Craig Johnson, Representative McKay, Representative Vance, the newly named Vice Chair to the Transportation Committee, Representative Stutes, Representative Mina, and myself, Chair McCabe. The staff that will be assisting us today are Recording Secretary Linda Jensen, Moderator Jake Wade, thank you very much, and Buddy Witt, my committee aide. I'd like to also recognize that Senator Shelley Hughes has joined us today, and I'd like to take just a moment to recognize her efforts and successes in representing this industry. In the 28th legislature, she sponsored and passed HCR 15, which established the Legislative Task Force on Unmanned Aircraft Systems. The recommendations of that task force resulted in her sponsorship and passage of HB 255, which set a regulatory framework for law enforcement's use of unmanned aircraft system and established a training program at the University of Alaska. In the 29th legislature, Senator Hughes sponsored and passed HCR 17, which encouraged the use of state land for further research and development of unmanned aircraft systems. Thank you, Senator, for your diligent work in this arena, and we are pleased to have you with us today. So today we have two exciting presentations on the agenda, but both involve the same subject, unmanned aircraft systems. Our first presentation will be from Ryan Marlowe, the UAS Program Manager for DOT. He will update the committee on the state's UAS program and how UAS technologies are being applied in services around the state. Our second presentation will be from Dr. Kathy Cahill, Director of the Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration. Mr. Marlowe is joining us by Teams today. Mr. Marlowe, welcome to the House Transportation Committee. Please place your name on the record and you can begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got a feedback here, one second. Ryan Marlowe, U.S. Program Manager for DOT.
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. So today, absolutely, we're going to be talking about the state of Alaska's UAS program, kind of highlighting a lot of the general overviews for the state of Alaska, as well as where we're going with the technology. On the screen right now, we can see a operation that happened in 2021 in partnership with Aquasi, but this is what the future of unmanned aviation looks like for Alaska. We're starting to utilize our runways, our resources, our technologies, and a lot of our assets to evaluate these technologies in the Arctic, out on the Aleutians. Really, they're being utilized across the entire state. Next slide, please. So at the moment, we have about 10 regulations in the state that govern UAS use. Of course, with the assistance from Senator Hughes on HB 255, we saw guidance and privacy guidelines developed. Actually, Alaska led the nation on many of these items. With the regulation of aeronautics, jumping to DOT, the use of UAS from law enforcement, and then, of course, the adoption of UAS as an aircraft. Unlawful use in wildlife mitigation or wildlife harassment or using during take, and then use of aircraft in state parks. So another big one for the state of Alaska that I always like to push out is the Marine Mammal Protection Act. So basically protecting marine mammals from UAS. We always see those amazing videos, but making sure that it is well known that those animals are protected under the MPAA. With the operation and guidelines and privacies, all of those can be found on our website as well, which I'll provide at the end. But we have fantastic resources for how to operate safely and how to facilitate those operations across the state. Next slide, please. So at the moment, program for – oh, was there a question?
Nope. Go ahead.
Perfect. At the moment, program for calendar year 2023, we're seeing about $35.4 million coming into the state through USDOT grants, FAA funding, State of Alaska, and private investments as well. Through many agencies, the integration of surveillance technologies, communications, radios, the UAS market is definitely growing rapidly in the state, and we're finding new applications every day for eliminating those risk factors of having state personnel or folks in harm's way when they can easily be done by a UAS platform. Next slide. Now, something pretty amazing is Alaska is the first state in the nation to have more registered UAS than manned aviation. So this is a gist of this year, our current registered unmanned. So these are everybody that are following the registration guidelines, which we believe is probably about 50 to 60% of the operators, puts us at about 9,095 aircraft, with the current registered manned aircraft at 8,668. On this map, you can also see where UAS have been deployed and then the per capita density of where UAS are. But at the moment, Alaska leads with the highest per capita ratio based off population of one aircraft per 81 people. So Alaska not only is seeing the largest growth and adoption, but the most usage across the state with these platforms from wildlife mitigation, land management, land survey, all of these in one, and I'll jump into it here a little bit later, even recreational use on the next slide.
We have a question, Mr. Marlowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, it's really great to see a lot of the increase in popularity for unmanned aviation. I'd like to know more about what are the training requirements to ensure that our pilots in Alaska are competent and safe. And especially, I'd love to learn more about, like, are there written tests or other requirements to become licensed? Thank you.
Yes, through the chair. And I did not see who that was.
Oh, Representative Genevieve Mina.
Through the chair, Representative Mina. At the moment, there's two ways that the state licenses operators, and this is for the industry as well, for commercial operations. FAA has posted Part 107, which is the primary commercial licensure for the operation of these vehicles. State of Alaska does require for any operations that this is the first step in getting licensed and certified. Now, we do have pathways for our existing airmen, so if they're coming from a private pilot, which many of our rural operators are, you know, Part 61 operators as well for private or commercial operations. But with those, we take those training courses, and that's the first step. The next step we have with the majority of our labs and outreach, we use what's known as a NIST training course. So this focuses heavily on the aircraft, the hands-on procedures, and really getting the operators used to the platform. And then in many cases, after they've certified in that aircraft, they'll jump into their individual specific training. If it's bridge training or land survey or hydrology, it kind of breaks down through there. So we spent quite a bit of time throughout the department of establishing not only the regional champions and training systems, but the support networks to facilitate those trainings and host them. Right now, we do it annually. DOT is seeing about a growth of 20 pilots a year, which I'll show in one of the next slides. But this training can be adopted for most agencies, as even well as public or civil groups as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please continue.
Next slide, please. So the latest from the FAA for those folks that are not pursuing civil operations is the Recreational UAS Safety Trust Test. This is a free test that's provided through Alaska's community-based organization or many other organizations for evaluating the use of UAS and allowing for them to fly as a recreational flyer. So just the kind of the common knowledge and getting them started down the pathway for either pursuing it or pursuing Part 107 certification, or just getting them knowledgeable in what resources are available. Now, with this has definitely been an outreach that University of Alaska Fairbanks and Akwasi has been doing through Camp Fire. The FAA safety team has been hosting quarterly meetings. We've seen it in the Anchorage School District, and many rural communities are starting to push the trust test as the requirement for all students pursuing careers or even just recreational usage for UAS. So at the moment in Alaska, we have about 5,800 recreational users, and right now I think about half of them have taken the trust test. So definitely working towards that and building that knowledge with the recreational users so that we can curb any usage near airports. It's kind of just the common sense and the safety items that we like to see with these folks flying these in the recognized areas. Next slide, please. So on the state side, kind of slowly starting to focus in on DOT operations. At the moment, you can see here based off the size, DOT currently has about 87 platforms, DNR 38, 23, 12, and 10. And we do see a one-to-one ratio. Most of these programs grow organically where, just like a laptop, the platform is checked out to the individual, and it pretty much stays with them. Seems to be the most efficient use that we've seen. But together, all of these agencies have started the Alaska UAS Technical Working Group under Alaska Geospatial Council. Now, the benefit of this is the sharing of manuals, procedures, and really integrating with the community on data storage procedures, data governance. So a lot of the, instead of having everybody try to figure out themselves, really prioritizing our issues and tackling them in partnership with the public too. We have survey companies, we have federal agencies. All of us are kind of figuring this out as we go. And so this is definitely going to be a major resource for the state of Alaska, as well as an emergency response. With the typhoon, Alaska Geospatial Council was kind of the one-stop shop for all of these items. So for the state to have this asset and these technologies available under this group is definitely a nice item. And we should have a finalized charter on this group next month, but we've started annual or monthly meetings and definitely making progress on making this available as a website too. Next slide, please. The DOT growth. As the one-to-one ratio, we started our program in 2016, and on average, we see about a growth of 20 pilots per year. Of course, we had the drop-off there in with COVID, but DOT, we've expanded to pretty much every group within, from avalanche to our geotechnical groups, here recently with our airport inspections, hydrology, environmental, GIS, survey, construction, and bridge design. These systems can be used in almost every application with the correct data collection methodologies. And with that, we're starting to see, you can see the attrition rate. So we started compensating for the attrition rate with our training program, but on average, on our cost metrics, we're seeing when we deploy UAS systems in the field, right now it's averaging at about a cost savings of about $7,000 a day compared to traditional aviation or other secondary surveys. So definitely a very useful tool in some of these areas where we just cannot get other assets. Next slide, please.
And Mr. Marlowe, if you'd hold on just a second, I'd like to recognize that Representative Sumner joined us at 1:12. Thanks. Continue.
So all of this is facilitated through Department of Transportation's remote sensing lab. So from the aircraft to the compliance with FAA, writing of our documentation, all of which we are able to support out of three labs. So we have one in Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks. Now, this isn't just for DOT. This helps support DPS, even local municipalities like Anchorage Police Department, DNR. So it's kind of our resource of aircraft, training manuals, procedures, the NIST courts, and in many cases now that these batteries are becoming hazardous material, it's how we can transport across the state. So we are a certified hazmat shipper and able to get these out to rural communities so that we can grab survey data and push out from there. And then most recently, this is where we house all of our GIS and CAD support. So as we start to integrate and visualize this data and make it accessible to the public, this is the GIS portion is very central for us. Next slide. Now, one of the big items that we've been focusing on heavily is the use of Blue UAS. Now, Blue UAS is a list of defined DoD-approved drones that are NDAA compliant, they're validated cyber and secure and safe to fly, and are available for government purchase and operations. A lot of the grants that we're starting to see are requiring these. So with the bridge groups and our survey groups and even our avalanche groups, we've been evaluating these systems year-round for bridge inspection and starting to test. Actually, that's why I can't join you here today, is we're testing one of the larger systems with the avalanche group here. So the aircraft are being evaluated in all conditions before we kind of put our stamp on them for normal use. Next slide, please. So bridge inspection, this is a big one for DOT, as we started our kind of integration about 3 years ago with these platforms. Now, in most cases, unmanned systems can't fly in GPS-denied environments, but you can see here this aircraft basically thinks for itself. It allows for us to get up inside of the decks and allows for us to inspect things that we would otherwise have to have a bucket truck or close down traffic. So for routine inspections, we're finding a significant amount of benefit of having these systems, and as well as the process data. This underbelly process that you're seeing here is one of the first in the nation to process imagery looking up. We've seen a lot of groups being able to do 2D and 3D mapping looking down, but to map something across a large space like that solely looking up is definitely a new feature and a new trick for comparing these products over time. So next slide. Jumping into thermal loading, we're starting to be able to see where we have dead concrete just by the way that the thermal reflectivity after the sun hitting it. So all of these sensors are miniaturizing and giving us a better look at some of these assets and infrastructure and being able to document this over time. So we can go back out, fly the exact same route with a different operator, capture the data, and compare it. So you'll start to see the trend of why GIS and data storage is so important, is we have to be able to compare to that initially collected data set. Next slide, please. And then reality capture in general, digitizing the environments. The best way to say it is we are creating a video game of the real world as high as resolution as possible. So we can take VR goggles and zoom in and look at Spalding, look at corrosion, look at missing bolts, all from the office. And what really is impressive about this is for about a 30-minute scan, which is all this takes, now we can go back and we have this data forever and we know exactly what that bridge looks like. You can even see here how we were able to see that this bridge had been struck with the 3D data that was processed out. But and then in many cases, this bridge had about a 3-foot gap underneath it. So we were able to send the UAS underneath there and it mapped the entire bridge belly with about 3 feet off the water. So in many places, we're putting a person, the drones are finally doing what we imagined they could do, just keeping people out of harm's way. Next slide. And lastly, our first autonomous scan. Now, what does this mean? This is the first time that we've ever told an aircraft to go explore and scan it for us. So this is actually up at Fish Creek there in Juneau, where we are testing the scan of the timber bridge. But the picture on the left there, that's a 3D model. It's just a very high res where you can see the creosote coming out of the timber. So this is the type of data that we're able to collect in the field. And you don't have to be a bridge engineer to do this. Anybody can collect this data, and we can use this to validate, is this bridge sound? You know, does it need to be closed? Do we need to update maintenance on it? So kind of re-looking at what those routine inspections look like by performing reality capture in the field of our assets. Next slide. Now with assets too, avalanche chutes are actually an asset for us, and we've been spending quite a bit of time learning how to document and classify this data, working with a quasi up in Adigan and down in Thane Road, and even in Turnagain Arm. We are now able to fly these systems. We take just the terrain data and we compare it against the snow load. And you can see on the right there, we can actually show you how deep the snow is and where mitigation needs to occur. Now, in many cases, some of these shoots are remote. So this year we'll be deploying remote systems. Think of it as like an office printer where we can post a bunch of missions to the aircraft, and when the weather is just perfect, it'll jump up, scan it, download the data and process, and give us this real-time feedback. So we're really looking at the use of these systems for monitoring assets and giving us as much data as possible on if these areas are safe, mitigation, when it needs to occur, or if we don't need to do any mitigation because the amount of snow volume up there doesn't have the potential to reach, you know, infrastructure. So these are all tools that we're evaluating as we go. Next slide. And further jumping into GIS, we are creating a lot of data. As we are starting to digitize and, as I mentioned before, create this digital model, GIS is not only changing the way that we input field notes, but somebody down in Anchorage can see a mitigation occurred 22 seconds ago in Attigan on shoot A. Well, here's the pictures, here's the data. So we're switching from a pen and paper to a real-time environment and sharing of data and building dashboards. So this is really where having the ability for us to not only capture and have this remote sensing data, but visualize it all at the same time. Next slide, please. Which is why we focus so much on GIS. So this dashboard right here is available from Statewide Aviation, I believe, here today. But what this shows is all of the airport projects that we're working on. And you can see on the bottom right, the ability for us to start using these tools to document pavement condition, document runways, document vegetation encroachment. So, and really opening up the transparency of what project funding, what it's being used for, what region, Senate district. So being able to share that data and allowing folks to get in there and look at it is definitely an amazing tool, which we are now tying together with our field collections with this drone data. Next slide, please. Now, with the drone data and GIS, what this also opens up is the ability to start using AI. Now, we're using AI to do pavement condition indexing. So this basically allows for us to see what the current status is of runways or asphalt. But here we tested it against our in-house expert, and we were able to get pretty close. The blue is where the computer did the AI processing, and the red is where we did our sampling. And the numbers were off by about 3%. So in many cases, once again, being able to keep our subject matter experts in-house or not have to go out into the field and collect this data, machine learning is proving to be a faster alternative. Of course, just coming with the downside of we need more data storage in order to make this work. But the ability for routinely being able to compare against it and looking for trend analysis on failure points in different environments, we can do all of that with AI and machine learning. Next slide, please.
Mr. Marlowe, Representative Vance has a question.
Thank you, through the chair. That was my question about the data storage. Do you see a potential, are you aware of the fiscal impact of all this data? Because obviously it's needed, but this is an incredible amount of data that now needs to be stored and likely shared between departments. Do you know if there is a current ask in the budget for this?
Through the chair, yes. And once again, I apologize. I did not see the representative.
Vance.
Right now, DGGS is leading the data storage efforts with the state. So Leslie Jones's group with Alaska Geospatial Council, I believe they have a 10 petabyte backup server. And I know on the other side of the house, we are looking at what this looks like for Azure deployment. So this has been a big item of data governance on the UAS side is what data do we keep? What do we get rid of? What needs to be archived? So we are paying very close attention to these data formats and what is most valuable for keeping.
Recording is off. Resume recording, press star 9 again. Recording is on. To pause recording, press star 9 again.
Sorry about that, Mr. Marlowe. You can continue.
Oh, I have.
One more question from Representative Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, just to follow up on Representative Vance's question, what are those current limitations on data storage right now? And I guess that connects back into the funding in the governor's budget. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Mina, really our only limitations that we're seeing is our bandwidth capabilities. We have the storage and cloud, but the expressways and the speed to get it there. Alaska does not have a dedicated cloud storage service through Microsoft or Azure. So a lot of this data is having to jump on and head to Washington or Oregon to be stored. So that's kind of where we are evaluating the use of either on-prem or hybrid environments for storage when we are processing and then having that trickle up to cloud storage when it's no longer in use. So all of which being evaluated at the moment. DOT has a couple different research projects for evaluating the use of image server and then some of the drone imagery storage. That's really been a big push on why we've headed towards GIS. It's just the sole management of all of this data. It's estimated just aviation data alone will be almost 250 terabytes. And then backed up, we'd probably be looking at a petabyte. So, which after a while, that starts to stack up significantly.
Thank you.
And one more question from Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, what kind of security measures do you have on this data? Because this is showing all of the vulnerabilities in our infrastructure and just in our issues with potential landslides and things like that could impact our populations. Are there added security measures to make sure that this data is safe, especially if it's not being stored in-house?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Vance, this is one of the big items that we've been spending a lot of time with OIT and this cloud migration on supporting, the continued security of this data, where we do have, critical infrastructure and important items that data either needs to be secured or made put into these different environments. But I would definitely, I can get more info on that from OIT, but that is definitely in my wheelhouse for the security side.
All right, thank you.
Okay, you can continue, Mr. Marlowe, thanks.
Next slide, please. So kind of just rolling through where this technology is of benefit. What we see here is Sandpoint Airport, the ability to visualize and capture these environments. Crew, myself and two surveyors were able to fly the entire airport in 24 minutes with LIDAR and process this on site. You can see there after the earthquake, the runway had sustained damage of dropping into the water there. So being able to visualize this helps us immediately get this on the repair list and start facilitating those operations to get this project funded. So not only for storytelling, but the ability for us to remote capture in less than 24 minutes, process it and visualize these significant issues. This is why this tool is so effective for us, is it would have cost us almost $60,000 to have a crew go out there for the day to capture this data. So cost savings, streamlining it, and getting this to the correct folks. We're continuing to find these innovations. Next slide, please. On the search and rescue side, we've been evaluating the use, especially with low Earth orbit technologies and live streaming, the ability to live stream and cloud process. So what you see here is this system was being operated by an operator down on, I believe this was in Nikiski, where we were looking for erosion, and we could process the data in real time, and everybody was able to watch and see that imagery come through. So in the event of a natural disaster, or once again, say the typhoon, we could have these systems deployed and capturing data in real time and processing on cloud services. So we're really starting to experiment with the benefits of the cloud and having everything be in these real-time environments. Next slide, please. So if you kind of start to see reality capture is the primary theme here, and we just keep on applying those same workflows to different usages. With our partnerships with Anchorage Police Department and DPS under our Traffic Safety Intelligence Transportation System, we're working with them to deploy these to increase scanning speeds so that we can get secondary traffic collisions or prevent secondary traffic collisions. So right now, with their current scanning technologies, it takes on average 2 hours to 3 hours to do some of these larger scenes. And so utilizing these on the highway and in traffic areas, one, keep folks out of harm's way and increase the amount of detail. Same detail we're looking at for detecting cracks on the bridges applies directly to documenting these fatal collision scenes. So this has been a nice ability for us to share not only resources, documentation, FAA procedures with these groups, but continuing to pass on what we've learned with this technology. And next slide. And lastly, I wanted to highlight an item. This is not we haven't been awarded yet, or they will be awarding it in March, but with a lot of these technologies, the state of Alaska is pursuing a DOT smart grant. So a stage one planning grant of about $2 million for deploying this technology out to rural communities for sharing in the processing, really bridging this out so that we can have different governments, municipalities, communities have this technology and have the availability for processing as using it for land management, resource management, wildlife management. So if successful with the stage one grant, this will be one of the first times that we see the state of Alaska deploying this on a large scale effort out to these communities for critical infrastructure, natural disaster response, but basically having our first line of defense with documentation when needed. So next slide, please. Jumping to the next side of this is advanced air mobility and kind of leading into Kathy's presentation on what we're up to. When I say advanced air mobility, what we're talking about is the impact of next-gen services, airspace, taking everything that we know is wrong with Alaska's airspace and attacking it with technology through, next slide, please, through weather reporting enhancements, surveillance, updated aeronautical charting, navigation, and safety outreach. So right now, the FAA has just completed their FASI document, which is their Alaska Aviation Safety Initiative. And next slide. And with that, kind of been looking at taking that and planning on top of it. So DOT has started planning with advanced air mobility, looking at the aviation infrastructure review. So looking at the age of all of our assets compared to Lower 48. Of course, a big one for us, wireless infrastructure and connectivity. Real-time cores network, satellite internet, broadband, the aviation weather coverage, electrification for air and ground vehicles, really just this next iteration of technology coming to the airport, and as well as focusing on Alaska. You know, it's common that Alaska does not get the same technologies that the rest of Lower 48 does. So we've been partnering with all of these groups for testing with air traffic, testing with next-gen surveillance technologies, and of course with the UAS portion, bringing all of these together into one safe environment. We just have the same amount of manned aircraft and unmanned systems, and the airspace hasn't gotten any safer. So these are the big items that we're starting to ask and visualize and represent across the board. Next slide, please. So looking at Alaska as our transportation system, you can see pretty much every area is dependent on aviation. Once again, pointing at our GIS dashboard and highlighting these items, but the potential benefits of what advanced air mobility has for Alaska, as well as the incoming pilot programs, highlighting the economic growth with next-gen technologies and development, all of which airspace and aviation is prime for development. One of the biggest things that FAA always says is we have our own mini NAS, which is our own airspace up here. So especially for resource development. Airspace is getting ready to become Alaska's next large resource for developing these next-gen services and aircraft. Next slide, please.
I have a question.
And Mr. Marlowe, Representative Mina has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I was looking back onto the slide 23, specifically about the FAA Alaska Aviation Safety Initiative, and I'd like to learn a little bit more about what those top safety concerns are and how that outreach is going. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Mina, FAA has done an incredible job. I believe they started this process in 2020 and have conducted these meetings over Teams, but basically they've reached out to industry stakeholders, focusing on these, on the primary slides. So GPS resiliency, weather is a big one for us, AWOS stations, and a lot of the primary tasks that they set forth in this is analyzing, you know, where we have our 135 carriers, and the FASI team has basically set the footprint for us to say, here are all the known problems, here's what we've done to correct within our means, and made this available as a published document as well. I'll be happy to send it to you for further review.
Thank you.
Thanks. Please continue.
So you can kind of see with LEO, rural broadband connectivity, and I know with the broadband efforts, this has been an item, but we have started testing these systems all across the state, and they are working. They're not quite there yet, but what the potential they offer for us with surveillance and real-time communications is outstanding. Live streaming with UAS, live streaming to the cloud for processing, really changing the way that we do things here in the state, and increasing from, in many places where 5 megabits per second is the maximum, we're seeing download rates in completely offline environments of about 174 megabits per second. So it's an amazing time to be testing and evaluating this technology for the state, because we're finally bringing these systems from just dial-up, or in many cases, we have no idea how things are doing, to we can see everything, we can move around there, we can deploy remote drone systems. It's really opening up the amount of technology that can be utilized for aviation and next-gen services. Next slide, please. And wrapping up on some of the other projects, just ACORN. This is the partnership we're jumping on with DNR to kind of help push this statewide reference network. All of these technologies that we've discussed have to know where they exist in time and place and with precision. From roadway vehicles to aircraft, very important that we have these systems all connected to that network. And so we've been working really hard to make sure that state resources, buildings, connectivity, all of which are available for pushing these systems through and making them available and having that as a service for the public as well as aviation sector. Next slide. Lastly, technology deployment. With the FASI document and our AAM development, we've highlighted two areas on where we would like to evaluate some of these next-gen technologies, one of which being Deadhorse, and the other one being Bethel. So looking at the use of, you know, what a remote tower can do, what it can do for the airport operations, what it can do for detection of wildlife on the runways, or smoke detection, or certified weather. There's a lot of benefit that comes with installation now that we can start hosting these real-time environments on the airport, or even having folks being able to log in with military assets, log into the airport, and log out when they're finished using it. So kind of a new way to approach air traffic control as well that we're very interested in evaluating up here. Next slide. And with everything you've seen here, we have an amazing website showcasing what you wear, where and how you can fly, all the documentation provided, as well as the UAS guidance on how to operate in the state of Alaska. Otherwise, I appreciate your time. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Mr. Marlowe. So any questions? Representative Mina.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. The first, thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. it's been really great to see a lot of the improvements, especially with GIS. It's incredibly impressive with the 3D imaging for traffic and other infrastructure. And I'm curious, pertaining to land surveying, with so much progress with the drone technology, has there been any impact on that land surveying workforce?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, absolutely. It was hard building this slide deck to try to showcase where we're having innovations, but land survey paved the way for a lot of these technologies. As we are seeing LiDAR technologies, our group in Northern Region, we just certified DOT's first LiDAR unit on a drone that we can start using for increasing the way that we collect data. So the ability for one person to capture square miles of roadway or infrastructure, we're getting close to that. Now, legally, of course, two people, but we are finding that this technology is integrating almost with every single survey operation within DOT in the state, and I know the same for other state agencies as well. But you can see that the survey groups basically laid the foundation for accuracy and our ability to reference and repeat these slides. And so we've been applying it to traffic collision, crime scene investigation, structure movement, land shift, there in Whittier, large scale shifting, all of which can be done and is built upon the principles provided by our land survey groups.
Thank you. I have a second question.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, there is a lot of data being collected, and I'm wondering if there are any privacy concerns and how DOT is addressing privacy.
So at the through the chair, Representative Mina, at the moment, all of our data is being collected. As far as privacy, we are focusing just on our project's individual. I know this is definitely an item on UAS loitering that Senator Hughes and the UAS task force focused on for quite some time is what is being collected. The data that we are focusing on is, I'll use the Sterling Highway project, primarily infrastructure projects. So that and the security on where we store it, that's one of the big items. DOT just finished one of their large data summits. And data storage, data governance, those are all big items that we're currently working on to highlight long-term storage for this data.
Thank you. One last question.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, what happens when a drone flies away, and how does DOT address that?
Through the chair, Representative Mina. So that's actually where my position came from, is managing that program. So we, when we first started with UAS, they were definitely unreliable. And I'm sure you'll see in Kathy's presentation next, we've come a long way of where we've been with this technology. There is, with Kathy's group, the ability to certify and perform airworthiness. So we are working with systems that are not deemed airworthy. They are deemed airworthy by the state. And so this is where we spend a significant amount of time testing them in all these environments, focusing on survey groups. So from where it used to be buy it off the shelf system, we do spend a good amount of time testing and creating failure environments to make sure that these systems are safe, dependable, reliable, and we know which environments they fail in. So that's one of the items that we continue to test with every possible environments to make sure that these operations remain safe and out of harm's way.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any further questions. So, Mr. Marlowe, thank you so much for your presentation. We appreciate it. And the committee will now receive a presentation from Dr. Kathy Cahill, Director of the Alaska Institute for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Dr. Cahill will update the committee on the fascinating research being conducted by her department in the field of unmanned aircraft and their integration into the national aerospace Dr. Cahill is joining us by Teams as well. Dr. Cahill, welcome. Please place your name on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Chair, honorable representatives and senators. My name is Kathy Cahill, and I'm the director for the Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration, also known as the AQUASI, at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. It is an honor to be here with you today, and I look forward to telling you about all of the interesting things we're doing. It is always a pleasure to follow Mr. Marlowe because our teams work so well together. We really are in this for how do we improve the state and how do we work to get the state the biggest bang for the buck. So with that, I'm going to start off with a video. This is part of the Empower Alaska campaign for the University of Alaska. And I will continue after the video. I'm going to go silent so that we don't have feedback.
So the fundamental question everybody asks is why Alaska? Why do we have one of the best drone programs in the entire country here in Alaska? And the answer is we have a need. The impact of this technology is going to be massive. We save lives with it. We improve quality of life with it. We help keep the best and brightest in our state. You know, it's a case where there are so many opportunities. It is very hard to encompass just how exciting this is and how many different ways this is going to touch people. So AQUASI is the University of Alaska's Center of Excellence for Unmanned Aircraft Research. You'll know unmanned aircraft as drones, and we are working on safely integrating drones with manned aircraft, traditional aircraft, in the airspace, and the whole purpose of what we're doing is to do this safely. So these are long distance missions in the airspace where you are not seeing the aircraft in the space around it with your own naked eye. You are requiring electronics through radar or onboard cameras to identify potential hazards in the airspace. So we've done everything from looking for whales in the St. Lawrence Seaway to flying over wildfires and indicating fire behavior. We've done monitoring of pipelines. We've measured glaciers and their motion. So there's a tremendous amount of stuff you can do with an unmanned aircraft on the scientific front. And additionally, there's the whole aspect of how do you benefit the Alaskans. The key thing here is a lot of what we are looking at doing is stuff that is really not that safe to do using traditional aircraft. So if you're in a remote community, the only way you get goods is they're flown in. Well, that's going to be really risky for the pilot. So if we can get, you know, milk and diapers out to the villages on a more regular basis, we actually are changing people's lives and helping them live in the place they want to be. And we're a part of that. The university has given me a tremendous opportunity. I never would have believed that I would be running one of the top drone programs in the world. I wouldn't have had that opportunity with other universities. And a lot of our employees are getting to experience that same sort of empowerment. And it's exciting. You know, we are on the cutting edge. We are proposing missions no one has ever done. This is something that is going to help people. It's going to increase safety and improve quality of life.
All right. Thank you very much. That is kind of an overview of why we do this. We feel that it's important. Our program is very passionate about this. So who is AQUASI? And, buddy, I can't see. Are we on the AQUASI slide? Yep. Thank you. We're the University of Alaska's Drone Center of Excellence. We really like to focus on three major things. One is really helping the FAA with the safe integration of drones into the national airspace system. Needless to say, this is vitally important for Alaska. We're an aviation state. We want there to be safe integration. We do not want man-on-man collisions. So being able to develop the policies, procedures, and test the technologies that will enable this is really important to us. It is something that impacts all of our lives every day. And of course, we want to make sure that the rules and regulations work for Alaska. There are a lot of cases where people are like, what? We should just let drones fly under 400 feet, nobody else. Well, we happen to know that everybody in Alaska flies under 400 feet. So we need to make sure that they're not writing rules and regulations that really stifle what we as Alaskans do. We're also supporting the Alaska drone users and industry. And this is a, you know, burgeoning field. We really want to set up a drone economy here in Alaska and thank all of you for your support of our program for us being able to do this. We're really excited about what this is going to look like in terms of workforce development and pathways to jobs, jobs in rural communities, turning cargo aircraft around, assisting our aircraft manufacturers to deploy and test up here. So there's a whole space here where, you know, understanding Alaskan needs and the Alaskan environment are something that we think is vitally important for, you know, being able to be safe in our operations. And of course, we're the University of Alaska. So scientific research is near and dear to our hearts. And we've got an entire university of really talented folks who have a lot of missions that are research missions, but they are going to lead to commercial enterprises. So, you know, we have people who are working on how do you integrate a fisheries LIDAR into a drone. Well, that has great impact, of course, if you need to count salmon reds or you're looking for herring balls and all of those missions that are right now fairly unsafe to do with the traditional aircraft. So on to the next slide. What is our overall goal? And those of you who've seen my talk know that this is something that is very important to me. And it is the full integration of drones into the national airspace system. And I love using this picture because our Sea Hunter is flying off the same runway as that cargo aircraft. Where is this picture taken? It was taken in Nunavut, Canada, because there are certain things you just can't do in the U.S. The good news is we are making progress on this particular front, and we are advancing the technologies. So we are getting closer to doing this routinely. So I know in terms of this committee, you have some new members, and some of you haven't seen kind of what we're doing. So I just want to give you a little idea of who we are. Next slide, please. We're the weirdest bunch you're ever going to encounter. We have everybody from me, who happens to be a hereditary academic, to retired Army warrant officers, you know, Chinook flight instructors, and everybody in between. But this diversity of experience means that we're bringing the best and brightest from all different directions together to for a common purpose. And I like to joke that if I come up with a conclusion and our director of operations, who's a retired Army warrant officer, comes up with the same conclusion, we've gone two different ways to get to that same conclusion, and we're probably in the right spot. Some important things here, all of our pilots are manned aircraft pilots. We want them to understand the airspace, and that is really, really important. A lot of technical teams are developing payloads, they're developing aircraft, and they're just like, we should just go fly. We know that there are people in this airspace. And so when you get back to that question, I think Representative Mina asked Ryan, what do you do with a flyaway? Well, the first thing you do is you try to make sure that the aircraft are airworthy enough that you don't have to worry about a flyaway. But then you put in a whole bunch of different fallbacks and safety procedures in terms of tracking it, being able to notify local aircraft, you know, it will have some return to home type issues. So there are ways that we handle this. And of course, if we're going to do test and evaluation flights, do we do it in a highly populated area? No, we go out somewhere where until we can establish the reliability of these aircraft, we don't have to worry about them flying away and having an impact on the local population. We want to make sure we do not in any way hurt people or property.
Dr. Cahill, Representative McKay has a question.
Through the chair, Representative McKay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Cahill, I know you have a lot of slides. That's a really quick question. On slide 4, you said there's certain things we can't do in the U.S. that we can do in Canada, if I understood. What was that referring to?
So in Canada right now, we are flying what's called beyond visual line of sight. So the pilot in command cannot see the aircraft. And in the United States, the FAA is very concerned about this because they're afraid if you can't see your aircraft in the airspace around it, and you lose link, you are going to hit some other aircraft. So in this particular case, the FAA is being very risk averse, and they want you to develop what's called detect and avoid technology, which means that your aircraft, if you lose link with it, will autonomously able to spot other aircraft in the air and avoid them. And this is one of the technologies that Quasi is working on. So that it's a case of, you know, no matter what happens, whether or not we lose contact to the aircraft is not going to hit another aircraft. In the fact that the FAA is very concerned about this, they don't let people fly beyond visual line of sight. You have to have a chase plane if you're doing this type of work, et cetera. So we are one of the groups that has been able to go the furthest with no human eyes on the aircraft. We went 3.9 miles over the Trans-Alaska pipeline just a couple years ago. That was a first in terms of some of these operations. And a lot of the time when you hear somebody say beyond visual line of sight, they just mean beyond visual line of sight of the pilot, but they have a visual observer a little further away. So it's considered a beyond visual line of sight operation, but they really have eyes on the aircraft at all times. We're talking true beyond visual line of sight where you do not see the aircraft and no visual observer sees the aircraft. In Canada, we have been able to fly 30,000 nautical miles beyond visual line of sight with our Sea Hunters. We imaged the entire Inuvik-Taytiyakak Highway. We have done 5 years worth of looking for North Atlantic right whales in the St. Lawrence Seaway. And so this is something that can't be done in the United States unless you're in restricted airspace. So what we're developing with Canada, the rules, regulations, policies, procedures, we are feeding back into the FAA. And the FAA is letting us do more and more pushing of these boundaries because we are working on the technologies to enable them. And until the FAA is comfortable that when we put an aircraft up in the air, we're not going to hit a general aviation plane no matter what happens, they're going to be resistant to us flying beyond visual line of sight.
Okay, thank you for that short explanation.
Sorry, the professor in me comes out.
So, Dr. Cahill, it's Representative McCabe. I'm interested to know, didn't we just get an FAA letter? Or didn't you just get an FAA letter or waiver of some of that line of sight requirements?
Representative McCabe, yes, we did. And so we have, and there's a slide in this later, hot off the press, we just got a waiver to some rules and regulations for some larger aircraft. They go up to 300 pounds. And that we can do beyond visual line of sight of the pilot in command if we have ground-based radar or a chase plane involved. But we don't have to ask for special approval of it. And so that was the first of these waivers ever given. They can only be given to one of the seven FAA test sites. Alaska was number one. The waiver number actually is 44803, which is the section dash one. So Alaska leads the way. Yet again, of course, the problem with trailblazing is it took us 2 years and 2 months to get that through the FAA. And, of course, all the other test sites will now get it within weeks, which, you know, the lead dog gets tired, but the lead dog also gets the best view. So it is a case where we are really working with the FAA to push these boundaries, and we do get some of these permissions because we have established a level of trust with the FAA. The test sites, I heard this during our last test site technical interchange meeting. So the seven FAA test sites, and what are we testing? We are testing prototype aircraft. Of all of the incidents and accidents which have gone down every year since the test sites were created, in the past 2 years, there was only one accident that was due to human error. So the test sites are reliable places to do the testing, and we do these test evaluations away from populated areas specifically to be able to develop the aircraft with minimal risk. And the FAA respects that, and we're seeing that they are giving us additional permissions.
Thanks, Doctor. So one follow-up. I assume you're working pretty closely with some of the big box delivery companies, as well as other drone, Aqualine and UPS and Amazon and all those that are trying to find a way to deliver packages by drones. My guess is they're probably following you all pretty close if you're the first ones.
So, Representative, yes, we are. Now, for us, we don't care quite as much about that last mile delivery. We care about the last hundreds of miles delivery to the rural communities. So we are working with some of the larger aircraft folks. So we're dealing more with UPS and FedEx than we are with some of the other ones, but that does not mean we are not partnered with them. And so it is a case where we have our fingers in multiples of those pies, but I think, in my personal opinion, the regional air cargo is going to be something that will be better accepted first, and we'll see where the package delivery goes. But yes, we are definitely tied in with a bunch of those companies at this point.
Thank you.
All right. So who we are, we're the Weird Bunch. And next slide, please. And so we also happen to be, in this particular case, very experienced militarily. Why is this important? We have an operational team. We basically run a military flight wing as a business in the university. Best and worst of all worlds. But it is a case where we have folks who understand aviation safety, but they also understand getting the mission done. And when you combine that with the fact that we're in a risk-averse environment, our team is able to put together programs, do flight testing that meets stringent safety requirements, but still meets the goal. And, you know, we're very, very proud of our veterans. Next slide, please. So in terms of who we are, FAA recognizes that we're one of the best. You know, we are the only single entity that has all three of these crown jewels. And I've shown this slide before. Next slide, please. It's expanding. So the Venn diagram is getting more chaotic. These next-gen projects are really designed at urban air mobility and large air cargo. So they are in that advanced air mobility category that Mr. Marlowe discussed. So in those particular cases, next slide, please. We are really working on how do we make the rules and regulations that are going to allow for advanced air mobility. Now, first steps, baby steps. There was a Beyond Visual Line of Sight Aviation Rulemaking Committee. There were 80-plus organizations present in this. We intentionally got on the right-of-way rules section of the committee because we knew that that was important for Alaska. And we're not just a drone program. We are Alaskan aviators. And so part of what we have to do is defend the Alaskan way of life. And it's very important that as drones are integrated, that we maintain the safety of the airspace in places where people are flying without ADS-B. You know, their general aviation, they may or may not be communicative. And so we gained a lot of allies. To be honest, we now have AOPA, Airline Pilots and Operators Association, I think, but I often get it wrong. They are now on the Strategic Planning Advisory Board for QASI. So it is a case where we have worked it out with pilot organizations that we're not going to do something stupid and shut them down. That's a very important component of this. Next slide, please. And go ahead. So we have a whole bunch of partners, and they're not partners you haven't heard of. So that's Merck Pharmaceuticals. That is Raytheon Intelligence and Space. You know, we have a whole bunch of local partners. You know, Alyeska Pipeline Service Company has been a hero for our testing. And this is really important because what we're doing is beyond just a small university, let's go do science testing program. Next slide, please. We also had a series of strategic planning efforts, and right now, last August, we brought together 16 stakeholders from across Alaska and anybody from folks in DEC and DOT, to Doyen, to trying to think, Northern Air Cargo. We had quite a range, and we really got together to talk about what a quasi is and how we're going to help the state of Alaska get to a drone economy. And as a result of 2 days of serious discussion, we ended up with a strategic plan that has 18 different areas of impact, tasks, individual tasks to get to each one. Needless to say, it's not something we can do in one fell swoop, and we definitely need help. But it's important that we are getting the stakeholder input in terms of what are the concerns, what things do people think we should be doing first. And that was a real advantage towards us making sure we're aiming our efforts for the benefit of the state. Next slide, please. So what makes us really different? This is something I like to highlight to folks. We have real-world use cases, as said in the video. We're agnostic about what technology we use, and this is something that surprises people. The Alaska test site, we're not looking to pick winners and losers. We're looking to pick something that works for Alaska. So we will test anything for anybody. We need to break the beyond visual line of sight challenge. We need to be able to do those long-distance missions in Alaska. And we don't fly a box. If you take a look at New York or North Dakota, they have a very, very highly instrumented box. They put in like $250 million in New York and $70 million with no beyond visual line of sight so far in North Dakota. And so they are working on this, but they really haven't done anything other than fly a box. We are trying to do real-world missions here. And as you're about to see, we're about to not just fly the box, but really break the box. Next slide, please. So in terms of advanced air mobility that Mr. Marlowe talked about, we're participating in several advanced air mobility efforts. In fact, we were told that Quasi is the leader for advanced air mobility in the country. We are doing actual flights and project safety oversight in Alaska. We have Merlin Labs coming up. They have an autonomous Cessna grain caravan. Before anybody panics, it has a safety pilot on board for doing tests and evaluation. They're partnered with Everts Air Cargo, and they're going to be doing flights between Fairbanks and Nenana starting in May. Our Sea Hunter, our 16-foot wingspan twin engine, will be doing flights between Fairbanks and Nenana starting in May. Down in California, we've been funded by that Next Generation portfolio. We've got two projects, and one uses X-Wing, which is a remotely piloted Cessna Grand Caravan, Reliable Robotics, which is a remotely piloted Cessna Grand Caravan, and Aurora Flight Sciences Centaur, which is an optionally piloted aircraft. The advantage to all of these is we are getting experience with larger traditional aircraft that have been modified to become unmanned. So we know how a Cessna behaves in Alaska. We know how often you have to maintain it. We know that it works on our runways. All of those things are going to really push the boundary with the FAA in terms of this is a solid aircraft. We know how this aircraft behaves. We're just doing a minor modification to it. Now, how do we ensure that modification is safe? And if we can manage to get them to let us, you know, do all of this testing we're doing, we're going to prove that this is something that can be used safely in the national airspace system. And with changing almost nothing in terms of our infrastructure, we can implement these into Alaska for a long distance cargo. Next slide, please. So cargo delivery is one of the first things we want to hit. Our last hundreds of miles problem, you know, when we think it's most valuable is if we can fly when traditional aircraft can't. So this is an important component of moving things forward. Anytime you're going to do cargo, you are going to have to get certified as an air carrier. Excuse me here. We have a lot of good air carriers in Alaska as partners. And they're really going to be able to bring this in and help with their fleet needs. The other thing is this hopefully will help us extend careers for pilots. We already have a pilot shortage. If we can have pilots be able to do remotely piloted aircraft, we still need their institutional knowledge of what are the winds and rainy paths. That's going to help us. That's not something you necessarily know with a remotely piloted aircraft. So hopefully this can extend the careers for pilots and help with that shortage. Next slide, please. So we are working with the larger aircraft. And we are now at Fairbanks International Airport. And they have asked us for one of our aircraft to hang over the second luggage carousel at FAI. So if you come soon and you see a pretty blue plane with more logos than a NASCAR, that is our Sentry. And then in terms of doing the actual operations, we told the airport they couldn't have it until we'd done our first operations. Next slide, please. Last May, we did our first operations at Fairbanks International Airport. We asked when was the least impact time we could fly. They said Sunday morning. It's amazing how much air traffic is at Fairbanks International Airport at Sunday morning at 8. But we were able to take our Sentry, so 400-pound aircraft, 13-foot wingspan. We were able to transponder her and fly her in the pattern with other air traffic. We knew we'd made it when air traffic control said it was seamless. And one of the standard flight instructors up here was in the pattern with us. He didn't know we were intending to fly that morning. Said we acted like any other aircraft. Yes, that's exactly what we want. We want that full integration. We want to be part of the airspace and have it be seamless. So, next slide. The next step for our larger aircraft is Fairbanks to Nenana. So what you see on the map here is an area where we have been given permission to fly. You'll notice it is south of the Tanana River. Why wouldn't we want to fly over the Tanana River? Because most general aviation flies over the Tanana River. So we're trying to make sure that we can do this test and evaluation without adversely impacting various airports. We have permission to fly at Fairbanks International, and we have permission to fly at Nenana. Next slide, please. Nenana is an important case for us because Nenana is going to be one of the emerging technologies test ranges we said we'd set up. We want people testing here in Alaska. We want our companies to have the advantage of having expertise to help them do testing under Arctic conditions. And so we are working with partners in Nenana, Palmer, and Valdez to set up three emerging technologies test ranges. And each range will have an on-site range manager, hangar space, test and evaluation equipment, and can get assistance from a quasi personnel with the test and evaluation of their aircraft. And the first one we really tackled here is Nenana. Next slide, please. So at Nenana Municipal Airport, we just signed a 50-year lease with the airport, and we are in the process of building a hangar at the airport. Why Nenana? Because Nenana and Fairbanks are both on the road system. They're about 40 miles apart. It is a Class G, uncontrolled, no-tower airport. And this is a really good first stepping stone to other communities in interior Alaska for test and evaluation. We have also signed a partnership agreement with Raytheon Intelligence and Space Division, and we are going to be implementing a new radar. And we'll be doing meteorological information research in terms of what are the challenges with radar with our tight boundary layers here in Alaska. And we are looking at doing beyond visual line of sight testing in the Nenana region. This will give us extra airspace awareness. So we guarantee that we are not going to have an adverse impact on general aviation as we're doing that testing. Gives the FAA more confidence in what we are doing. Next slide, please. So here we go, hot off the press, Chairman. On Monday, we received a waiver from the FAA that basically expanded our ability to help drone manufacturers get their aircraft approved for use in the National Airspace System. This will allow us to actually take aircraft through what's called the Valley of Death. Right now, you can do aeronautical research with us as a public aircraft operator as the test site. But as soon as the aircraft becomes, shall we say, competent, the FAA lawyers say, well, now it's no longer aeronautical research. The reality is we need to have research on the failures of aircraft as they're putting hours on it, building towards the number of hours they need to certify the aircraft for the FAA. But that was not considered aeronautical research, so we couldn't help them get through that. We can now get paid, which is a novel concept in its own right, to help companies build the hours on the aircraft because we now have permission to act as a civil aircraft. instead of just public. This is huge. This is what the test sites should have been given 12 years ago when they were set up. So this is a very, very important piece for us being able to help drone manufacturers do the test and evaluation. Some of the other pieces that came with this that are very important is it actually allows us to train people. Before, we could only train our own crew on our large aircraft. We could not train other people on anything bigger than 55 pounds. So this is huge for us to be able to do training. And, of course, some of the aircraft above 55 pounds are the ones you want to be using for firefighting and other things. We also can now do noise testing. We can do demonstrations of capabilities. All of those things were prohibited when we had to fly as a public aircraft. So now we have a lot more flexibility, and this was a really important effort, and the state was instrumental in this happening. The commissioner of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Senator Murkowski, Senator Sullivan, and Congressman Young all pushed on the FAA to get this done, periodically inquiring as to how it was going. And as I said earlier, after 2 years and 2 months, we finally were able to tell them we got it. So exciting for us, long haul. Now let's put it to work for Alaskans. All right, next slide, please. So, of course, a lot of what we want to do is this detect and avoid testing. This is an example with our partner Vigilant Aerospace showing their product, which basically shows where you are, shows what would be considered a near miss, shows the area in yellow where we call well clear. You want to keep your unmanned aircraft and the manned aircraft from never both being in that yellow box at the same yellow cube cylinder at the same time. And it tells you, okay, assuming this aircraft continues on this track, how do you need to move your drone to avoid a collision and that near miss capability? This is the type of technology FAA is looking for to be able to do those long distance beyond visual line of sight missions. Next slide, please. And of course, we're working on pipeline monitoring. You know, this is important. We actually are, you know, we've got an area the FAA gave us of about 20 miles long to be able to do beyond visual line of sight testing with small unmanned aircraft. We're going to be doing a lot of operations up there with that detect and avoid. We're also going to be buying, I think within the next week, $1 million system that is a vertical takeoff and landing system with about 12 and a half hours endurance. And this is something that will allow us to test whether or not we need vertiports. And also long distance surveillance, you know, can you fly low and slow and get good imaging over pipelines, power lines, roads, all of these other things, and be able to do it beyond visual line of sight. So that is where that detect and avoid comes in. Major thrust for us this year. And then next slide, please. People may have seen this one before. We've done a lot of work, as I said, with Transport Canada. I like the image in the middle of the right side because that is our Sea Hunter taxiing by a commercial passenger aircraft using the same runways, et cetera. And, of course, bottom right is a whale. The next slide shows what our cameras are doing. I always love to show this one because can you spot the whale? If you say you can spot the whale, I will say you're lying because looking up close, I can't spot the whale. But next slide, please. The artificial intelligence payload we helped develop found the underwater whale. And so we've been doing operations here where we can spot the whales and send back a latitude, longitude, and a picture that is good enough for a marine mammal observer, if it's the whales on the surface, to determine type of whale and gender. Very, very important for preserving the life of the North Atlantic right whales because that's really what Transport Canada is looking for. If we spot a North Atlantic right whale, they will slow shipping in the St. Lawrence Seaway. They're reevaluating the program this year, and so we're not going back, which actually is great because it means we can focus on flying in Alaska. But this was a really valuable contract and very, very important set of work, which I think will have direct applicability to oil and gas companies here in Alaska that are concerned about being able to monitor marine mammals. Next slide, please. We're working a whole bunch on disaster response. There's a major project going on right now under the FAA Center of Excellence for UAS Research, focused on how do we communicate between all the different drone owners during a disaster. So, you know, you take the Anchorage, 2018 earthquake, you had a lot of drones put up in the air, but you also had a lot of traditional aircraft put up in the air. So how do we bring together all of the assets that Ryan listed among all of our different agencies? And I'm proud to say that Kwasi has been included in the Geospatial Council Technical Working Group. So we're part of the team. But how do we, when there's an emergency, identify who's got what assets where? How do we fly them without conflict between manned aircraft and drones and between drones themselves? And so there's a lot of work being done right now at the university on how do you communicate it? Who are the stakeholders? So that if we do have a volcanic eruption, say Mount Spur in Anchorage, how do we deal with it where we have the maximum effect of the limited resources we have? And as Ryan mentioned, we're getting to play with Department of Transportation on looking at avalanche potential. And of course, once we identify avalanche potential, what do we all want to do? We all want to mitigate avalanche potential. So I know that there is work ongoing on some of these topics. Next slide, please. So this is a new one for us. We have stepped into the realm of counter-drone. So what is counter-drone? Counter-drone is being able to spot, detect, track, identify, and or mitigate drones that are have clueless criminal or careless intent. So this can be anything from law enforcement or the TSA saying we have an aircraft flying over the Fairbanks International runway in terms of a notification, to somebody who has authority and only five agencies in the country do, DOJ, DOE, DOD, DHS, and FAA, but only at five airports, be able to take that aircraft down so that the operations can continue. And so this is something where you are very, very careful in terms of privacy. You need to have privacy assessment thresholds. You have to work with one of those five agencies to do this type of research. This is not something you can just go in your backyard and shoot something. That is illegal. You'll run into Title 18 and Title 49. And Senator Hughes, with her initial working group, put out a beautiful flyer that is still appropriate to this day that says, don't shoot the aircraft. You know, it is illegal. It could be 20 years imprisonment and up to $200,000 in fines. And, of course, the last picture it could have taken could be you shooting it. So, you know, you don't want to leave evidence like that. But so this is a case where these five agencies really need to be doing testing and evaluation of these systems. They are going to be and have been deployed at some assets up here. You know, we don't want to leave our military bases unexposed. But a lot of the work, they really haven't done the testing in the Arctic environment. So that's something, and they haven't done testing on what are the impacts on first responder communications, navigational aids in the airspace. So this is where we are working with the FAA, DOJ, and the Army to really work these things for Alaska. And this is the paperwork project from hell in terms of actually doing this, but the impact on the safety of our airspace and for our assets, whether they be pipelines, ports, military bases, is going to be really, really important. So we're doing a lot of work on that front. It's exciting. I love the concept of mitigation, and for some reason they won't let me press any buttons to make things blow up. I'm working on it. Next slide, please. And of course, being the University of Alaska, education is one of our key things. All of the universities are working on developing curriculum and courses. We are working on developing certificates that can be distance delivered across the state. We're working with partners to identify what the workforce needs are going to be. Because right now, if you send a cargo aircraft into a community, who unloads the plane? The pilot does. So what happens when you send that cargo aircraft into the community and there's no pilot? Well, somebody's got to be there to unload the aircraft. You need to also have people who can maintain the aircraft. A lot of people think of drones as small toys. We're talking Cessna Grand Caravan toys. So it is a case where you need to have someone who is an airframe and power plant mechanic, able to certify the aircraft, be able to do a regular maintenance schedule to ensure the safety of that aircraft. So we're working with certificates. We're trying to identify new workforce flows. And of course, we want to make sure that we keep the best and brightest in Alaska in Alaska. So we are talking about aerospace engineering programs that are being given through UAA and UAF. We have a lot of distance delivered courses where students at Anchorage and at Fairbanks will both be building their own drones. And an instructor at one of the campuses will be teaching both courses. There's a lot of exciting stuff moving on here. And then, of course, we want to steal our youngest students. We want to get them excited. We want them to think about science, technology, engineering, and math. And, of course, now they're saying STEAM, add in the arts. And with drones, cinematography, and other things, the arts really are applicable. So we're working across the state where we do outreaches to various schools, and we try to get some of our crotchety old pilots and some young, enthusiastic people of great diversity, you know, women, Alaska Natives, others, to show people that these jobs are real and there are things that they can do. Let's get them some role models that, hey, I can do that. You know, if I go fly a drone during one of these, I've had little girls have the attitude of, oh, if she can do it, I can do it. And that's exactly part of what we want to do. This is something that we are all passionate about, and I love watching our crusty old pilots just turn into the biggest set of softies you've ever seen when you give them kids and drones. So next slide, please. What's next for us? So in the next 6 months, we're going to assist partners in flying the first converted Cessna Grand Caravans in Alaska with safety pilots on board. Pilots, you don't need to worry. We're going to take care of you. We're going to do our first drone mission between Fairbanks and Nanana, hopefully followed by a whole lot more. Let's do that, detect and avoid testing. Let's prove that we can go long distances safely. Next slide, please. We're going to be conducting several counter-drone flight campaigns in Alaska and other locations. We're partnered with New Mexico State University, the University of North Dakota, University of Alabama, Huntsville, and Mississippi State University to do a series of flight campaigns under different conditions, whether it be urban, it be cold, it be warm. So, of course, we did a campaign the past 2 weeks, so I wanted cold, highly inverted, miserable conditions in Fairbanks. So it was 20 degrees above warm and snowing. Murphy is an optimist. But it is a case we're going to be continuing to try to get some real-world Alaskan-type conditions. We're looking at developing the metrics for success of our efforts to spur economic development in the drone industry. We're working with the Institute of Social and Economic Research, you know, ICER, down at UAA, and some really good economists down there to really determine what's a success, because the whole purpose of our endeavor is to develop that drone economy in Alaska, you know, all aspects of it. Let's encourage the businesses. Let's get the workforce set up. And the university can play the long game here, unlike venture capital folks, where if you don't get the immediate response, you're in trouble. And with the FAA, you don't get that immediate response. And, of course, we're going to keep working with DOT. Mr. Marlowe, Mr. LaRue, and others are wonderful allies for us. And we also are going to continue work with DEC, DNR, everybody else in the state of Alaska system, to really get these systems engaged, being put to work, and to be able to expand the capabilities to assist everyone. And, of course, then we love conducting stuff. Next slide, please. So we did get an influx of funding. Thank you, everybody who supported us, for FY23. And this really is to lay that foundation of that drone economy. So we've hired faculty and instructors for drone aerospace curriculum delivery. So this includes, you know, working with community and technical college on drone certifications, you know, certificates all the way through aerospace engineering programs. You know, we want to make sure that we are doing it at all different levels. We've engaged ICER to help evaluate the economics. We've worked on identifying the locations and started standing up the three emerging technologies test ranges. NANA got the bulk of the infrastructure money this year. If we are lucky enough to get a slot of funding for next year, then we are going to be looking at making sure that Palmer and Valdez are completely stood up. We're excited about this. We want people to be able to test in a variety of conditions safely. And next slide, please. We are going to be accelerating the DAA, the detect and avoid testing and pioneering flights needed to prove the safety of BVLOS. We have special permission right now under the Beyond program to push the boundaries on this Beyond Visual Line of Sight. They're helping us with these longer distance cargo delivery missions. And while we have this for another year and a half, I think, we're going to take as much advantage of that program as possible. They're giving us accelerated permissions. Let's use them and push Alaska. We purchased, or actually next week, we're going to be purchasing a large vertical takeoff and landing drone. A system usually has three aircraft, ground control station, all of the backup supplies, tools, everything you need to be operational. This one can fit in a van. So this is going to be something where we can take it various places to do testing in a wide variety of regions. And this will really help DOT in terms of understanding what you need for vertiports. And then the governor asked us to conduct a global autonomous systems conference. The date is now Anchorage, August 9th through 11th in the Dena Center. The theme this year is Trailblazing Autonomous Paths for a New World Economy. We are excited. This will be our first annual one. We intend for it to be a routine conference. And we have a lot of exciting information, speakers, et cetera, coming up. So we're enthusiastic about this. If we get the additional funding the governor put into the budget for us through the legislature, we have other things we'd like to do. So next slide, please. We want to be able to hire faculty. And this includes, community technical college level faculty, certified in flight instructor and curriculum to developers to get a workforce focused drone certification program that can be delivered across Alaska. We want to look at the ANSEP model and really look at some drone focused dual enrollment programs for high school students. This technology gets kids excited, and we really want to keep them here and feed them into the University of Alaska. The University of Alaska is a really good deal. We turn out high quality students, and this gives them an opportunity. If they've gone through, usually they tend to stay in Alaska. So let's use this to our advantage. We're looking at doing the second annual Global Autonomous Systems Conference. And next slide, please. Really standing up the three emerging technologies test ranges, getting additional pilots and engineers to help with the emerging technology test ranges, and also to help the DAA testing and the longer distance flights needed to prove the BVLOS safety operations. So we're doing Fairbanks to Nanana right now. Merlin Labs, I said, is bringing their converted Cessna Grand Caravan. They also intend to hit Tanana, Hooslea, Prudhoe Bay. So they really are looking at Galena. They're not just looking Fairbanks to Nanana. That for them is the first step, and they're going to move beyond this fairly quickly, and we want to make sure that we are assisting. This is important for our state's long-term economy. Next slide, please. So overall, we're really excited about helping get a drone economy going in Alaska. We want to make sure that we are doing a lot of the tests and evaluation because we can, and the FAA trusts us to be able to really look at the business cases and make sure that we have drones that actually can work here in Alaska. As we're developing the technologies and processes, we want to be able to monitor essential infrastructure. We want to be able to do all those other beyond visual line of sight missions that right now we can't. We've had to tell people no when they asked us to go survey 7 miles of salmon stream because we would have had to put visual observers every 2 miles. At that point, you should just take a helicopter or a small plane and fly it. So let's make sure that we can do these missions without the silliness that is currently involved. Anything we do, we're going to be transferring to Alaskan companies. We are working with a lot of Alaska companies on unusual missions. For example, flying water samples from a Cook Inlet oil rig to the shore to be able to meet the Department of Environmental Conservation, you know, water sampling requirements. These are things that you don't necessarily think about, but they're important to our Alaskan companies, and we want to make sure that we're working those. And of course, we want to make sure that we are developing that workforce that we need for the long-term sustainability of aviation, especially unmanned aviation in Alaska. And with that, I'm going to say, Universe Alaska and our partners, we are going to lead the way through routine operations, and we are grateful for all of the support the legislature and the governor have given us to be able to do what we have done so far. And with that, I'm going to ask if there are any questions or if I put you all to sleep.
Thanks, Dr. Cahill. Let me see if there's any questions. And Representative Mina, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I first just wanted to thank you for the presentation. This was very interesting and very cool to learn about, and I think the university is doing fantastic work for Alaska to make sure that we're a leader in drone technologies, and appreciate the work that Senator Hughes has done as well in this realm. I'd love to learn more about, you know, especially with the recent FAA waiver. That's excellent. Are we seeing more companies that are going to start to gravitate and invest in drone technologies in Alaska and the work that ACUASI is doing to partner with those companies?
Representative Mina, through the chair, I'm delighted to talk to you about that. We have a lot of companies who have expressed interest in actually moving branches up here. Merlin Labs is one. They are talking about actually setting up a company here in Fairbanks to support the operations they're doing. Reliable Robotics has as well. DroneUp, which works with Walmart, has been talking to us about doing something similar. So the fact that we have this waiver and we can bring folks up to help get their aircraft through that valley of death is going to be huge. But the reality is right now the FAA is telling people, if you want to do advanced air mobility and you want to do large unmanned aircraft cargo, come to the University of Alaska.
Wonderful.
That we are going to be the ones who do it.
Thank you.
So, Representative Suits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a comment. I want to mimic Representative Mina, but I think part of the excitement of this presentation was your excitement about this project. It's palpable, and I think that everybody in the room could feel your excitement, which is really, really an asset to both the university and to us as Alaskans. So I want to thank you very much.
So with the indulgence of the committee, I'd like to ask if Senator Hughes might say a word or two based on her previous experience. I'd appreciate some comments from her. I know it's a little unusual, but if you wouldn't mind indulging me, committee, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the House Transportation Committee. This was a decade ago that we began this journey, and just to give you a little background, at the time, I was being asked by various Alaskans and constituents to file a bill to ban drones. Those bills were being filed in other states, and one had already been filed in this building in the other body. No, I think it was in the House at the time. And, you know, and I just want to mention that because it's always incumbent upon us to research issues. And when I did, I realized that drones were tools, that there was nothing inherently evil about the drone. You could have a bad actor as an operator, but if we could set the parameters, I realized how helpful they could be, and I realized it could help a quasi be chosen as one of the test sites, and this could be an economic opportunity for Alaska. So I applaud hearing Dr. Cahill's report, and I was hoping, Dr. Cahill, you'd be here in person through the chair, because I was hoping to see you, but maybe down the road sometime. And also, Ryan, because Ryan was someone really engaged when we had the task force, and he was helping me understand the whole potential and navigate, because there were a lot of people back then worried about Big Brother spying on us and all those things. And we kind of worked through that. And the FAA was, they were working through how we were going to deal with all these recreational users. And there's still some work ahead. But to know the work that's being done after 10 years and the opportunity that is basically at our feet to develop this industry to a greater degree, we've got an awful lot of airspace, don't we? And there's real potential. So it was a great update for me to hear. And I thank you, Mr. Chair, for hosting this hearing, because I think it's an important thing for Alaska to realize we're having great success in the area of unmanned aircraft systems.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it. I have a friend on the East Coast who has started a Uber drone company. And his vision is that a real estate agent or somebody that wanted pictures of a house that they were going to list that they couldn't get to, or they just wanted drone pictures, could do an Uber thing with a drone, and they could contract with them and go out and take pictures of the area, as well as surveyors and land purchasers and that sort of stuff. So the technology is increasing, and the need and the demand for drones is increasing exponentially, and I'm really happy to hear that in Alaska is number one in this FAA permit. And also, Dr. Cahill, I'd like to urge you to maybe open a dialogue with the Wasilla High School, who has a really dynamic sort of different education classes that they have started. They have the first fire science, high school fire science class in the country. And they've done a bunch with electricians and woodworking, and boy, it would be really cool to engage young kids early in this emerging technology. So with that, I want to thank Dr. Cahill and Mr. Marlowe for their presentation and this discussion. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, February 14th, where we will be given an overview presentation and operational update from the Alaska Marine Highway System. And the committee will also take up the appointment of James Cunningham to the Alaska Board of Marine Pilots. So seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect that it is 2:43 p.m.